Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you with your host, Corey Smith, and co-host, Eric Howdige. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and APCO Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fixed Operations Training Director with EasyCare. I'm being joined by my co-host and partner in crime, Eric Howdige. Welcome to Forward.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? It's an honor to be here next to one of the best in the industry, Corey Smith. And today we have an exciting guest.
Chris Craig is with us today. Chris, how are you?
Good. How are you, my friend? Happy to be here.
Chris, tell our audience a little bit about you, what you're doing now and how you got started.
Yeah. So the long and short of it is I have a mission in the automotive industry, and I just want to help elevate the people that make this industry. I mean, the industry is made of people, and I feel like in certain cases, we kind of forget about that. And my whole thing is just help people become better. I think that everybody has this innate thing in them somewhere, even if they don't recognize it yet, that they do want to climb that ladder and become better. And I just want to do my part to help facilitate that process. I have extensive background in the automotive industry. All of my college level education comes from it. I was a service advisor at 4 different dealerships, 3 different manufacturers. I've done imports, I've done domestics, I've done luxury, and I've done regular vehicles. I was also a technician in an independent shop, and I was a parts retail manager. So I've got like the trifecta of experience in there, which is, you know, good and bad experience. And I will say that it was my experience as a service advisor that really inspired me to start doing what I do, which is content creation, which is curriculum creation with RockEd, which is publications like my book, and just endless resources. I'd like to think endless resources for automotive professionals to do what I like to call becoming better.
I love that. So let's take a second and just let's talk about this great book that you wrote. How's it going with the book?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. It's finally launched. It's out there. Getting great reviews coming back. I've had an outstanding reception. One beautiful thing about being a content creator is you get this really nice community surrounded around you, just people that aren't just watching the content. They're actually being a part of it, and they're in the comment section. They're discussing. It's gotten to a point now where, you know, if there's a question asked in the comment section, I'm not the one that always has to answer it. There's someone from the community that's right there answering it, like, hey, there's a video on this. Go check this out. Or here's what I've done in the past. And that's everything I've ever wanted. So I wrote the book as a way to give back to the industry, back to the people that put me on a platform and allowed me to do all the great things I'm able to do for the industry. So that was really the intent and purpose behind it. There's not too many resources out there right now. There's starting to get more popular, but there's not a lot of resources out there for advisors in particular to receive training, which is a wild concept when you think about it, because everything flows through that advisor. When a customer thinks of a shop or a dealership or wherever, they don't think about the owner. They don't think about the brand. They think about that face, that service advisor, that person that helps them, which means that that person, that advisor, is the chief retention officer for the entire establishment. For every customer that comes through, that retention of that customer flows through that advisor. But I can tell you from experience, I've been hired on and given a clipboard and told good luck. And I was on the service lane before I even had a shirt that matched everyone else. I was just wearing a regular shirt. I didn't have a team shirt or anything like that. People wanted, do you even work here? I didn't know the process yet. I didn't know how to use the DMS. I didn't even have a login, but I was out there trying to write up customers. I mean, but this is not just my story. This is everybody's story.
I got the same story.
Yeah. And that, you know, that's one of the main things I really want to turn around in this industry. I can't change what certain managers out there do, but what I can do is provide what they are not providing. And that's my whole intent with the book. That's my intent with my content and my intent with everything I do for this industry.
What's the name of the book?
Becoming a Better Service Professional.
And where can people find it?
You can find it on Amazon. It's linked in my bio, but if you just go on Amazon and you search for it, you'll find it. It'll pull right up.
Nice. So this is right in your wheelhouse. The title of this episode is Retention Starts in the Drive, right? And Eric and I joke about this all the time, is that whether you like it or not, you're on stage with that customer. And similar story that you had, my introduction to the car business was 1998. It was a Nissan store, and my boss was like, there's your computer, which was a green screen. There's your phone. There's your route sheet. Those are your techs. Good luck. And that was it.
Yeah.
So fast forward to where we are right now, and my biggest passion, along with yours and Eric, I can say the same, is that we want to help guide those advisors, learn from the mistakes that we made so they can become more profitable, right, for their dealership, making more money, having an easier life. So I'll start you off with this question. You started on the service drive. How did the experience shape your approach to leadership today?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you my experience on the drive. One particular dealership I started, and it was my second one. It was a massive change for me. I was going from a rural, small 8-bay garage to a 36-bay garage in a metropolitan area with lots of tourists and stuff. And I noticed on my first couple of days, well, I will tell you that I started on this first day and the manager didn't even know who I was when I walked in the door. He forgot he even hired me. So that was an interesting thing. Like, do I still have a job? So I didn't feel super welcome there to begin with. And everybody was just in a really bad mood. And I thought maybe it was just that Tennessee heat because we worked basically outside because we didn't have air conditioning for our service advisors or technicians. So I thought maybe that was it. But what I realized was just there was no direction. There was no assistance. There was no support. There was nothing available for resources for anybody. Everybody was dealing with fundamental issues, login issues, DMS issues, printer issues, communication issues, process issues. I mean, you name it, it was a problem. And we had a manager that just wasn't capable of solving the problems. He actually didn't know how to use a DMS. He didn't know how to print a repair order. He didn't know how to print an invoice. He would constantly approach my desk and ask me to print documents out for him. I was talking to one other advisor and actually learned that he paid this other advisor something like $500 to do his manufacturer training so that he could be green across the board and certified and everything he has to do for that manufacturer because he was new to the manufacturer. So he had no idea how to do, frankly, his job. And, you know, we saw high turnover in that store. I saw people come and go. I left that store at month 13 and I was the 12th advisor to go. So that's about one advisor a month. And there's supposed to be seven advisors in the lane at all times. When I left, there was only two other people left. And I mean, there's supposed to be seven there. I had 150 open repair orders because everybody else that had quit or got fired. Their repair orders came on me. I was the only service advisor, mainline service advisor for a shop of 36 bays. One advisor, 150 open repair orders. I mean, I was just drowning in it. And the manager didn't come out, try to help out with some tickets. He just stayed in his office and went home early at 3 o'clock every day. And, you know, that was one manager. That's one story. But it's a story that I've heard time and time and time again. I've had other managers like that in the past, different flavors of bad. And what it made me realize is that there is a fundamental difference between a manager and a leader. You need to be both. We have a lot of great managers out there. Managers keep you in the black. That place was still making money. That's what you look at when you're a manager is what's on a spreadsheet. I can put a value to it, a percentage, a dollar sign. I can see if it's green or black. If it's in the black, we're in good shape. That's management. Leadership is something different. Leadership is fundamentally about people. And the reason for that is in order to be a leader, people have to willingly follow you. Not numbers, not spreadsheets. People have to choose to willingly follow you. We've all worked in those places where there's a manager, there's somebody in charge. But then there's this other employee over here on the side. Maybe in my case, it was the dispatcher that we all went to when we had problems, not because he had a title, not because he had rank or authority, but because that person chose to take care of the person to the left of them and the right of them. And that's what leadership is all about. So when you see these statistics come out, like the JM&A statistic from 2019, I think it was revised in 2025, where we have a 49% turnover rate for service advisors across the U.S. and dealerships, that's a leadership problem 100%. Because when you go into a service lane, you look around and you know half of those people, statistically speaking, won't be here in 12 months. They're not always walking away from the job. I can tell you from experience, they're usually going to another dealership or another shop to be a service advisor again. So they're not walking away from the job. They're not walking away from the industry in a lot of cases. They're walking away from their leadership. So my experience on the service lane, especially in the first couple of days, made me quickly realize how important leadership is in order to make this industry a place that people actually want to work within.
Now, it's amazing the how many wows I had while you were speaking. I think Corey and I had a tune going back and forth, right? and as you're saying it, I'm sure that the people listening as well as we are, we're reliving some of these moments where you can kind of place yourself back in the service drive. And one of the things that really hits home is you see that customer and you don't know if you're going to see them again because you know that the service and leadership provided wasn't what you want to provide, right? It's just what's there. And service professionals do have a hard time knowing how to keep that customer coming back because their resources are limited where they stand. What are some of the specific things you've done to boost retention in service, and how do you measure that success?
Yeah, so it all boils down to leadership. If you want to boost retention, the first thing you have to boost is you have to patch up the retention of your team. I'll give you an example. That same dealership, I'll keep using that as a running example because that's just the goldmine of stories right there. My very first customer I tried to help on that service lane, I welcomed them by name. I did everything I was supposed to. Checked the appointment, made sure I didn't ask, do you have an appointment? I did everything I could to make sure that this first interaction went off good. The customer looked me square in the eye, and I'm not joking. He said, another new face. Like, what is it with this place? There's always new people here. He even said something to the tune of, you know, why would I spend the money coming here? I should just look for the lowest bidder every time I need an oil change because I talk to somebody brand new anyways. I might as well go to new shops every single time. And it's really hard to turn something like that around. You know, it's like, well, I promise I'm here to stay. I don't really have a logoed shirt or anything or a way to log in. And I'm not sure how I'm going to make your repair order because I can't log into the system yet, but I am going to help you. And it just puts you at a severe disadvantage. So if you're interested in customer retention, you need to first be interested in team member retention, because that team member retention is how you ensure that you have long time tenured people on your drive. And when you have those long time tenured people on your drive, that's how you build long lasting relationships with customers. If you don't have a long tenured person on your drive, you don't have enough time to build relationships. If half of your people, 49%, are leaving year after year after year, relationships are leaving year after year after year after year. When advisors leave your drive, customers leave your drive. So my message to leaders out there is if you want retention of your customers, you need to first focus on retention of your team.
That is well said. I love that. So we all do service advisor training. Chris, I'm sure you talk about it in your classes. How do you keep service advisors engaged and aligned in the customer first mindset? Because it's the hardest job in the dealership is being a service advisor. Lot of things to juggle.
Yeah, so it's a two-pronged answer. The first one, I'll tackle the leadership piece first. Leaders, if you want your advisors to have a customer first approach, you need to have an advisor first approach. You need to support those people, your advisors, and make sure that they have everything they need to satisfy those customers. It's really, really hard for them to do it if they don't have the resources. As a leader, you have two things fundamentally that you can delegate, either your authority or your responsibility. Often is it the case that and managers, they'll delegate that responsibility and hang on to the authority because it's ego, it's power. I want to have the ability to make all these choices, but you're responsible for everything in here because I'm going to hold you accountable. That's not the way to go. As a leader, you want to hold on to the responsibility because ultimately it's your department, and delegate as much authority down to the advisors as possible. Train them on how to use it, hold them accountable to use it properly, reel them back in as needed. But the more authority they have, the more they have the ability to do their job. And that's how you empower your people. Once that's in place, if we want to focus on how the advisors can stay on that customer focused mindset, I always talk about the value that advisors have. There was a statistic out there that I heard from one of the great auto groups that I helped do some training for. They pulled the statistic for me, and it actually found that there's only 90,000 on average service advisors in franchise dealerships across the United States. 90,000. They also pulled a statistic that said there's about 900,000 physicians out there in the same sphere, in the same area, United States. That's telling. That means that the service advisor position is actually super special, a little bit rare, and extremely valuable, extremely specialized. When I'm doing my classes, I always mention things like, you know, when my wife walks up to her Volkswagen, she sees a tire. When I walk up to her Volkswagen, I see a wear pattern, right? I start to see some problems with the tread. She might just see a ding in the door, but I see some other problems like brake dust around the rim. And that's what advisors see. When they approach a car, immediately they notice, oh, geez, that tire is in bad shape. I see some brake dust around right there. It looks like there's a little dent in the tailpipe. They notice all these different things because we have a specialized set of eyes. With these specialized set of eyes and the experience that we have and everything that we have in our background, we are super specialized and we can offer value. And that's really what it's all about, is presenting and offering that value to our customers. Because every customer, even the ones that always say no, they have this anxious thing in the back of their mind thinking, I really haven't done much for this vehicle in the last 3 years outside of oil changes and like tire rotations. Like, I don't know if I need to worry about my brakes or my coolant or what that even is. Every customer has that little anxious thing. They don't always bring it out and say it, but they want to take care of that vehicle. And I know this because when I really focused on my customer and I focused on just simply educating them and giving them information, not trying to sell, but just saying, hey, this is where you're at with your maintenance. this is what's due. This is what's due in the coming months. This is what you've taken care of. If you do all of this today, that means you'll be 100% on your maintenance until this point in time. How would you like to proceed? And normally they weren't even really worried about how much it was due or not, or the price or anything. They were just relieved to know exactly what was going on with their vehicle for the next 6 months. It's something I took completely off their plate. And when I take that completely off their plate and I explain to them how I have all their history documented here, and I've been the one helping them all along, and I've got all the information they need, and I can answer their questions, and I can prioritize the repairs and maintenance, and I can explain to them what's next and what to expect, I become their car person, right? I'm in the center of their world. And if I'm in the center of their world, why would that customer want to deviate and go to anybody else? That's really what the customer first focus is for a service advisor. It's just presenting value at every step of the way. If you present value at every step of the way, you really don't even need to sell, because those things will ultimately sell themselves, because we're not upselling in this industry. I don't use that term. An upsell is if I sell you a mattress and then I sell you pillows and sheets to go along with it. You needed a mattress. You did not need pillows and sheets. I upsold those. But when your vehicle comes in for an oil change and you have brakes that are 2/32 or 2 millimeters the whole way around, and I sell you brakes, I didn't upsell you something you didn't need. You needed brakes. So I'm not upselling anything. I'm offering you valuable recommendations for your vehicle and asking you how you'd like to proceed.
You know, one of the things that you mentioned right now was, and it caught my attention, specialized eyes and the recommendations, the things that vehicles need, right? And a lot of that comes from the service advisors, but a lot of it also comes from the technicians. It's a team effort. When we're speaking about technicians, there's so many areas that we go to, and there's so many different types of shops, technicians, processes, cultures. What's working when it comes to keeping technicians happy and loyal right now?
Yeah, so this comes down to ultimately the relationship between the advisor and the technician. I can tell you, as a content creator on social media, as an influencer, if you will, as somebody that's been a technician and advisor, I often create content with skits that start with an interaction between an advisor and a technician, and it brings out a lot of great discussion. And what I find is it's a lot of us versus them. Technicians can't stand those advisors. Advisors can't stand those technicians. Those advisors know nothing about vehicles. Those technicians are prima donnas and only work for the finest gold or whatever. And that opposition is not helpful to anybody. There's been a lot of people that say we don't need advisors. There's a lot of people that said we don't need technicians like those. We could do something different. And it's just fundamentally not the case. We have to remember that the advisor is the official liaison. They are the advocate of the technician, or excuse me, the advocate of the customer, and they're the representative of the technician. So when that technician speaks to the advisor, it's best to imagine that you're speaking to the customer. And this goes into something that I was actually told, actually taught by a good, really good friend and service director out of Florida. He explained to me that on every repair order, for every line item, there's actually two sales that occur. The first sale is between the technician and the advisor, and the second sale is between the advisor and the customer. Oftentimes, I hear technicians complain that advisors don't properly sell jobs, don't properly explain it, don't properly tell how important it is. But I often wonder, did the technician properly explain that to the advisor in the first place? That's that first sale. So as a technician, and then I'll speak to advisors after, as a technician, if you're somebody that's struggling with this, make sure that you're actually giving sufficient information, loading the lips of your advisor so that they can actually approach that customer and sell it effectively in the same way that you would. And as far as the advisors go, if you're not getting that information, ask for it. I'm not asking you to be a technical guru. If you watch my content, you'll know that in the first 1 to 2 years, or maybe even three, I personally don't care if an advisor knows anything about a car. What I need them to know is customer service. We have a shop full of technicians that know everything about a car. That's your information resource. Learn ticket by ticket. So it's that communication piece. It's that teamwork piece. We have to get technicians and advisors working better together in order to assist their customer, which in turn will make them much happier, because there won't be so much angst and false competition between the two. When you get that teamwork, you get cohesion, you get that feeling of belonging, you feel like you're part of something bigger than yourself, you start to succeed, you get more authorizations, more happy customers. All of those things are what drive that sort of, I'm happy to work here, I'm happy to be retained here, I'm proud to be part of this industry sort of thing. So it's really, really driving that relationship between the advisor and the technician and helping them help each other. You cannot make money as an advisor if you don't have a great technician. You cannot make money as a technician if you don't have a great advisor.
It's very true, right? That's a Great answer. I love that. How do you approach training and the growing entry-level techs into long-term high-performing employees?
Yeah. So for technicians, it's you got to pay attention, right? I did a study with Rockhead. I interviewed 11 industry experts, and I used the answers from those interviews to craft a survey, which I launched out to my platform, and I had 804 responses, all of which were automotive professionals in some capacity, mostly technicians, maintenance technicians after that, service advisors. After that, we had general managers, service managers, and we had some shop owners and mobile mechanics and things of that nature mixed in there as well, and some parts professionals too. So we really focused in on, you know, some of the things that might be causing this technician shortage we hear so much about. And some of the things that we really discovered was we lose most of our technicians in the first 6 to 12 months. They get hired and then they're gone. And we focused in on the culture shift that we experience. Either you're coming off the street into your first shop, or you're coming out of tech school, especially when you're coming out of tech school into your first shop. I can tell you, as somebody that graduated at tech school, you rebuilt transmissions, you rebuilt engines, you diagnosed EVs, you did all this really cool stuff, and then you get hired and you're changing oil. And you know you're capable of more because you've done all of these things, at least in a live work lab at some capacity. But it's important that we understand that there's two ladders here. There's the knowledge ladder and there's the experience ladder. If you're coming out of tech school, you climbed to the top of the knowledge ladder. You got the knowledge down pat, like the fundamental knowledge. You got some hands-on experience working in live work labs, things like that. When you go into the dealership or into the shop, independent or whatever, that's when you start to climb the experience ladder. This is the message to the new technicians, is that you have to understand that you have to earn the trust of your employer. You carry a lot of liability when you're working on these vehicles. That first 6 to 12 months is really about proving that you can be trusted. But leaders, you can't just hire them and forget all about them, because they're already kind of feeling some kind of way because they're just changing oil and they feel like there's no end in sight. And that's usually when we start to lose them, is when they think there's no way to climb this ladder. So make sure you're checking in with those people. I love the idea of at least quarterly having an update, like, hey, how you feel about working here? What do you think? Like, what are some areas you could improve in? Here's what I've observed, like actually being engaged as a leader. And that starts that early planting the seed. It puts in the mind of that young technician that, like, hey, this person cares. And if I put in the work and the effort, I could grow into something more. And that's really what starts that little burn and that desire. And they start to want to grow as a technician. But also, it takes a good leader to facilitate that. If you inspire that in them, you have to provide them the path, or at least a semblance of it. Maybe that's an apprenticeship with one of your senior technicians, or maybe it's sending them to school or something like that to get them some more certifications, or assisting them with getting ASE certifications, facilitating all that kind of stuff. That's really what it's all about, is planting the seed, inspiring them to want to do more so that they actually want to stick around, and then facilitating them a way to do that, explaining to them, hey, if you ever want to be in the main shop, these are the things I need you to do, so they know what the path is. If they don't know the path, they think there's not a path, and then they get off the path.
Chris, one of the areas that we work with so much is having business, right? Having enough vehicles to service, making sure that there's correct flow. You have advertisement, you have online, people with billboards, TV commercials, social media. But what are some of the missed opportunities you see between sales and service when it comes to customer retention?
Yeah, so we have an issue where we tend to treat sales as its own company and then service as its own company, when really there are two profit centers under the same roof. They're on the same team. I worked really well with certain salespeople that would always bring all of their customers to me when they bought a vehicle, introduce them to me, give them my card, and we would set them their first oil change appointment. I would just have to remember to call them and reschedule it, because it probably wasn't going to be accurate in 6 months from now, for example. So, but that really just bridged the gap. You know, when you're a customer and you pull into a dealership for the first time ever for service, it's chaos. There's cars everywhere. There's nowhere to park. You see this big bay that says service over the top of it. The door opens up, but you don't see anybody inside. You pull in, there's people walking around. You don't know if you got to leave your car on, shut it off, roll the window down, get out of the vehicle. What am I supposed to do? Am I in the right spot? There's a lot of angst and stuff like that, and a lot of anxiety that comes with that. And it just starts the whole thing off on the wrong foot. And remember, it's in the service department where we really build that relationship. That's not the way we want to start it out. So as a salesperson, when you sell a vehicle, bring them to the service department, show them where they pull in, make sure that they know who they're going to be dealing with, or at least know where the team is, so they know what's going on and what to expect, and set that first appointment. That's super important. But equally in service, you know, I always say, especially if you work in a dealership, every customer that you make a recommendation to has three options, and three options only. And I open the floor to anybody that can prove this wrong. And I ask every one of my classes, can you prove this wrong? Because no one's been able to do it yet. I've had it on social media. No one's been able to do it yet. Customers have three options when you present them with a repair for their vehicle. They can fix it with you, they can fix it with somebody else, or they can trade the vehicle in. I know those are the three options because vehicles are freedom and nobody's going to change their entire lifestyle and just not solve this problem. They're not going to take the bus and Uber for the rest of their life. They will figure it out. They'll fix the car with you. They'll fix it with somebody else to trade it and get another car. That's what they're going to do. The two options that we can accept when you're a service advisor in a dealership is fix the vehicle with me or trade the vehicle in. Sometimes that's appropriate. I've had customers that had super high mileage, a really bad multi-point inspection report, and an extremely expensive repair. Time to trade the vehicle in. Make sure you get that person with a salesperson and make sure they know they have options. Say, hey, here's your estimate for repair. Here's the health assessment of your vehicle. This is what I expect we could probably run into as we move forward in service. But why don't you explore a trade-in option, evaluation, everything with your salesperson? Explore that to the end until you have a decision point. Come back and talk to me as needed. If you want to fix the vehicle, we will. If you want to trade the vehicle in, we will. Either way, we retain the customer and take care of the customer. So on the sales side, introduce every single customer to the service department. On the service side, make sure you know when it's appropriate to introduce them to a salesperson for a trade-in option and present it that way. Because there's this like sharky thing that we hear about, this stigma that we hear about where, you know, every time I bring my vehicle in for service, all they want to do is sell me a new car. Well, it's not always the case. I know there's some people like that out there, but really it's about presenting it as an option. Say, hey, you know, I know so you have some high mileage on this thing. It's a pretty expensive repair, and it looks like we've had you in here pretty frequently recently, and I don't know if that's going to change, and it might be more cost-effective for you to kind of look at a trade-in option. Totally up to you. You can either fix it with me or explore this option. I just want to let you know it's available. I can get a salesperson with you right away. If not, we can just proceed with this repair. How would you like to proceed? That's how I like to do it as a service advisor.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into this topic. Let's get farther in. We have an area where we keep customers longer. For instead of keeping them 5 to 6 years, it's growing, right? It's been growing. Now it's up to 13 years, almost 14 years. How are you connecting the dots between the F&I department, the service department, especially around prepaid maintenance and the VSCs, which are vehicle service contracts? How are we keeping that and how are you connecting the dots?
Yeah, so this right here is one of the for me, my own experience, this is one of the most fundamentally frustrating areas that I've actually dealt with. And the reason for that is there's already a weak connection between sales and service. There is virtually no connection between finance and service, no communication whatsoever. There's many advisors out there in dealerships that don't know what products that their finance department offers. And I know that from experience because I've been caught off guard before in a dealership I worked in for a very long time. They're like, yeah, I've got this maintenance program. And I look it up and I'm like, oh, we sell this? I had no idea that we even came anywhere near. So I had no idea this is one of our products. So there's a lot to talk about there. First, it's just clarifying what's going on between the two. So service folks need to know what their finance people are selling. And then finance people need to explain properly what those things are. It's not a magical piece of paper that's going to cover everything and do everything and be over the moon and back. I can't tell you how many customers I've had to disappoint on my end because their wheel and tire coverage didn't do everything that they were told that it does. So make sure that we're clarifying language between the two. And I've actually ran into situations where I talked to a finance manager and he or she didn't actually know that what they were communicating was not correct for the contract they were selling. So I had to actually educate the finance manager. I'm like, hey, people are getting upset because you're saying this does this, but it actually does that. And I had to clarify that. So what we really need to do is have stronger communication between the two. You know, we have shop meetings and we have service drive meetings, but it'd be great to have even just a monthly huddle between the finance department and the service lane to really actually connect those dots so that communication can occur. And make sure that we know when a customer has a service contract. It's the worst thing in the world when you sell a service contract to a customer for $4,000 or $5,000 and you get to a point where it's time to give them an estimate and they say, well, wait, this isn't under warranty. It's, oh, you have a warranty? Yeah, I bought it from you guys. I paid $5,000 for that thing. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. We totally forgot. Let me make sure we can make a claim on that. And then you're scrambling because your technician's got it in his bay and you're calling to make a claim and it's just a mess and it wastes everybody time and it really damages the trust that you could potentially have with that customer. So what we really need to do is we need to have more information, at the very least, more information flowing between finance and service. And if you don't want to pull them together and have them discuss it, you should at least have part of your service drive meeting with your advisors, knowing what the finance managers are currently offering and how to find that information in your DMS once it's sold. And then on the finance side, know what's going on in the service lane. If customers are constantly complaining about one program because maybe they're getting some misinformation there, make sure that we know that so we can make those corrections. It's really just connecting the two. Just like how we want to make the technician and advisor work better together, we want to make the finance department and the service department work better together.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. That was a great question, Eric. What are some simple changes that can be made to transition from sales to service to make it feel more seamless for the customer?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to sound really simple because it's actually fundamentally how it's supposed to go. But the key here is actually doing it, because it's something that we always, like, there's even surveys out there that ask if people have done this, and people just, in a lot of cases, don't do it. Intentionally bring your customer to the service drive. Try to introduce them to somebody. If they're all busy, it's a really busy time. Maybe it's not the best time. Try to get back to it later, but at least take them there. Show them where it is. Point out how you're going to navigate through the parking lot. You'll pull in, take a right. You'll go right up through there. The service bay doors are open. Don't worry. You can go in. Pull all the way to the end. Put your vehicle in park. Feel free to sit in there and wait. Your advisor will be with you shortly. Just give them that introduction. That's really just being intentional about it and doing it. There's not like a super sleek ninja trick to make this happen. It's about really intentionally doing it every single time, making it a part of a consistent practice. And if you do it consistently time and time again, that's where that seamlessness will come in. Because as a service advisor, I checked in a lot of customers. When you're first starting at a dealership, you know, you check in at a few and it's like, okay, this worked, this didn't work, this wasn't so great, and this worked out really well. And you start to make it more seamless because you get your verbiage together, because repetition is how we get that done. So that's the answer, repetition. Just make sure you're doing it every single time. It'll become more seamless as you go.
Yeah, no, I like that. Simple. Keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
Chris, what do you think dealerships still get wrong about the customer experience?
Yeah, I'm going to get on a soapbox for this one. I actually just made a post about this recently. Here's one of the biggest things they get wrong. And this is one of the big things I think drives service advisors away. I know it's one of the things that really frustrated me the most. We have surveys. We know they're out there. CSI is a thing. We often compensate our advisors based on their survey scores. And frankly, we place a lot on the plate of the service advisor. A lot of things they're graded on and compensated by, it has to do with their customer's experience with certain things they can't control. I've gotten bad surveys because the restrooms were dirty. It's like, it's not my lane. I don't handle that. I don't even use that restroom. I've had customers give me really bad surveys because we changed what kind of creamers we have for our coffee, or maybe our coffee maker was broken. I've had these crazy surveys before, and it's damaged my paycheck up to like $2,000-$3,000 per month before. And that's a very difficult thing to handle. So one thing is, I think we place too much on the advisor fundamentally. I think that we have to hold some of that responsibility at the management level. And what I mean by that is, I don't think that we're using surveys correctly. The reason why anybody surveys a crowd is to find out what their experience was. And if we notice trends in a negative direction, we notice a pattern. And when we notice that pattern, we know there's a problem fundamentally that everyone's dealing with. And we know there's a problem, we have to identify a solution, and we have to actually implement that solution. In my experience, and I know this is a lot of experiences out there, you get a bad survey, you call the customer back, you offer them something for free, you basically beg them to redo the survey or never to do that again, or maybe turn it around on Google or something like that. And we don't solve the problem, we band-aid it. And that's exhausting for an advisor to go through, to just get slammed on a survey, then have to like basically beg the customer to never do it again, or if you have the opportunity to fill it out again or come back in, we'll do a free oil change. And it's just, it's demeaning to the advisor, because oftentimes it's something outside of their control anyways, and then we're just trying to offer free things, and that's not the right answer. As a manager, as a leader, what we need to do is, when we notice a trend, like car wash, for example, I got a ton of bad surveys for car washes getting scratched, like, fix the car wash. Let's not just give free oil changes because people are complaining about the car wash ripping their antennas off. Let's fix the car wash so it doesn't rip off the antennas anymore. And that's where I think that we're really falling short, is that we're not utilizing these surveys as they should be utilized. Leaders should be looking at it, noticing patterns, and actually implementing change. And that's how you truly satisfy a customer. Because me, like, if somebody messes me up in a customer service realm, I would rather them solve the problem, not offer me something for free. I actually don't like, I prefer not when they just like, oh, I'll just discount your service today. Like I had an exterminator the other day that's like, I'll give you a discount because I didn't come on Saturday like I was supposed to, and then I was late and I messed up your plans. It's like, I don't want a discount. I just want to make sure that moving forward that I know this won't happen again. That's really what it is, because that person offered me a discount, but they didn't offer me an ongoing solution. I don't know. And this is a true story. I actually have an exterminator for an ant problem in this new house I moved into. So he just didn't show up. It was a big problem. and it's a subscription thing. So it's like, are you going to show up next time or not? Like, we didn't actually confirm that. He just gave me some money off. It's like, that didn't really solve my problem. I'm not really feeling great about this moving forward. So that's what I think that we really should be focusing on, is when we notice these patterns, these very clear and distinct patterns of, you know, they told me my check engine light would be same day when I set the appointment, but when I pulled in, my advisor said it would have to be overnight for a diagnostic. We probably don't have parts in stock. Okay, let's see what the BDC is doing over here. Let's see why they're setting appointments like that and telling people they can wait on check engine lights instead of instructing our advisors to just peruse the appointments in the morning to solve that problem and avoid those issues. Let's actually solve the root problem, which might be because we have a couple of untrained people setting appointments improperly. That's just an example. I'm not saying everyone's dealing with that, but that's the kind of stuff that we really got to do, because that's what customers want. They want solutions to the problems, ongoing solutions, not band-aids, actual solutions. And we don't do that right now.
Chris, what are, I mean, there's so much information for people that are hearing. I mean, even me as a listener right now, I'm going through and I'm going down memory lane, remembering the surveys, right? I'm remembering going through and in my first week of being a service advisor. And there is a lot of information that's being given. What are three takeaways that somebody listening can take from all the information you gave today?
Yeah. No matter how many problems there are, leadership can solve all of them, 100%. And that'd be takeaway number one. Takeaway number two is, this does not mean that if you're not in a position of leadership, that it's not on you to solve these problems, because leadership is not a position, it's an action. In the military, that's one of the many hats I wear. In the very first days of basic training, they teach you how to be a leader, which you might think is bizarre because I'm supposed to learn how to follow and take orders. But really, we want to train leaders as early as possible. That leadership development is so important, because I would rather everybody in my team have the characteristics of a leader: honor, integrity, honesty, following through, thoroughness, all those different things that a leader embodies. I want everybody to have those qualities. So if you're not in a position of leadership, you still have the ability to lead, or at least continue with the characteristics of a leader, which will help alleviate some of these issues. So that's takeaway number two. And then takeaway number three is don't sweat it, right? It's just the automotive industry. These are amazing careers, but this isn't life. I've been that guy where my wife had to wake me up because I'm telling her to pull cars around, and I'm falling asleep and I'm seeing that blue Reynolds and Reynolds screen, and I'm trying to write repair orders in my sleep. And, you know, that's a lot. We work a lot of long hours in this industry. So take your lunch breaks, take your time when you have it. Don't sweat it. Don't worry about what's going to happen to those customers in the meantime. There should be a leader in place and other advisors that can help you out with those things. Don't let it engulf your life. Let it enhance your life.
Chris, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I am very available across TikTok, YouTube, and LinkedIn. You can find me there at my handle, Chris_MF_Craig. On LinkedIn, it's just my name, Christopher Craig. My email is chrismfcraig@gmail.com. You can find me on any one of those platforms. Feel free to reach out to me on email anytime. Very receptive to everybody, answering DMs all the time. If it's a busy moment, it might be a little over 24 hours before I get back to you, but I do my best.
Awesome. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We're an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products, and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock the potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, please feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Chris, this is all the time that we have for today. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for being a part of this episode. And I'll ask this last question like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
Corey, absolutely, anytime. It's my pleasure. I had a blast. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.